Welcome to the Perpetual Notion Machine for Thursday, February 9th, 2017. I'm your host, Will Cushman. On Thursday, January 12th, we re-aired an interview that originally ran on December 15th, 2016, with Tim Schmidt. Tim has been a satellite research meteorologist at UW-Madison Space Science and Engineering Center, and he now works at the Center for Satellite Applications and Research at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, otherwise known as NOAA. In our last conversation with Tim, he and Dennis Schaefer talked about a new weather satellite that had recently been launched called GOES-16. Since that last interview, though, the GOES-16 weather satellite has sent back its first data, including a bunch of really cool images. So that's basically what we're going to talk about tonight. Tim returns to tell us a little bit more about GOES-16 and the scientific contributions it's already making. Tim, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I guess my first question is, can you just remind us a little bit about the conversation you had with Dennis?
Sure. Yeah. Well, first of all, we'll break down GOES. As you know, we like to make acronyms out of everything. So geostationary operational environmental satellite. Geostationary describes the orbit it's in. It's 36,000 kilometers from the surface of the Earth, where it's rotating at the same rate as the Earth. So it gives you images above, you know, at the same spot, so you can get rapid imagery. Operational means, you know, it's got to work. It's, you know, it's not a research thing. It's a, you know, life and property. Environmental, we call them weather satellites, but they do more than just weather. They look at the sun, the solar, the ocean, hazards, etc. And of course, S, satellite, for satellite. So, you know, we've had a long history of operational satellites. First, in 1975, started when GOES-A, which became GOES-1. We give them letters, so when they get to geostationary orbit, they get numbers. So that has been operational since 1975. So our current operation satellites we have up there are GOES-13 and GOES-15. And what will continue this operations is this GOES, what was GOES-R, and is now GOES-16.
Right.
So it's the new generation, and like we say, it's improved, improved, and improved.
Awesome. Yeah, so could you tell us a little bit about like how it's improved?
Sure. So there are different attributes of a satellite that's monitoring the Earth. One, for example, is how often do you get images. So our current operational satellite, we can get images over the United States every 15 or 30 minutes, which is pretty good. I mean, that's but with this new generation one, we'll routinely get data every 5 minutes. And there are these special smaller scale areas that we can look at and get images every 1 minute, these two different locations. So then when you look at rapidly changing phenomena like convection, you know, you can really see it as it's happening. So again, that first thing is just how often you get an image. Another one is how fine of a detail, what can you resolve right now? You know, we're looking at in the infrared or the heat of the surface, we're looking at something like a four-kilometer field of view on the current generation. Well, that goes down to 2 kilometers or factor of 4 spatially. And then there are different spectral regions that you can have filters on the satellite to look at different part of the electromagnetic spectrum. So in the visible, near-infrared or infrared, current generation, we have 5. That's good. But GOES-R, the ABI, the Advanced Baseline Imager, has 16, so over a factor of 3 improvement there.
Right, right. And I want to get more to the images in a little bit, but we were talking earlier about the visible light images and how they're spectacular.
Yeah.
But we were also talking about how they, I guess in the past, have been a little bit overlooked in terms of like instrumentation of satellites.
Yeah, so in the geostationary imagers, we've always had, and first the first images, back up even before operational satellites. ATS-1 was the first geostationary satellite, and that had an experimental imager on it. The principal investigator was the father of weather satellites, Vern Tsumi, a professor here at UW. So that was in 1966. So that was actually had a visible band on it, and we've had on our operational, we've had one visible band. But what's new about this ABI is now we have 2 visible bands, and you can compare and you can add that to some of the near-infrared or near-visible bands and now make these nice color images, which we couldn't with our current generations, or one, for example, GOES 1 through GOES 15.
Okay, sure. And so in addition to just looking really great, what are some of the observational advantages to that?
Well, as I mentioned, we have new spectral bands.
Right.
And for that, we can now see some features that we couldn't see before. So, for example, there's a couple bands that are sensitive to SO2 in the atmosphere that's associated with volcanic eruptions.
Okay.
Apparently, and if you have a large amount of SO2, you might have some ash in there. Apparently, pilots don't like to fly through ash clouds because the engines can stop. The satellites, especially the geostationary ones, with their rapid viewing and these new spectral bands, can now watch over and look for these volcanic ash clouds. And so that's one example for aviation safety. There's another, like I say, we can do a better job of monitoring fires or hot spots. There's an additional instrument. There's an advanced baseline imager. There's a brand new instrument called the Geostationary Lightning Mapper, and that'll give you total lightning. So the cloud to ground is about 15% of the lightning, which is good, but that means it misses about 85% of it.
Right.
And there's some thought research that when you see a rapid increase of lightning followed by a rapid decreasing in total lightning, that can be a precursor to severe weather.
Okay.
So the idea is when you combine the new attributes of the advanced baseline imager with the geostationary lightning mapper that we can get more lead time for severe weather.
Gotcha. Going back briefly to the volcanic ash, this reminds me of, I think, was it in 2010 with the volcano in Iceland?
Yep.
And there was all the air traffic disruption going back and forth from Europe. Were they just being extra conservative then because they didn't have this kind of finer grained data that would be available now?
Yep. A little bit of both. A colleague, was taking some of the European satellite data and running some of his algorithms to find where the ash is, and giving that to the people in Europe or whatever. So there is an open question: is how much ash is too much ash?
Right.
So you're right. When you're not exactly sure where it is or how much is too much, you go on the side of caution. But with these new advanced instruments, you can then do a better job of characterizing the source, then put that in a numerical model that's going to then advect it, disperse it, and get a better idea of where it's going or, more importantly, where it's not going. So maybe you don't have to close down as much airspace.
Right. So you got back the first images on, was it January 13th?
The 15th of January.
Okay.
Okay. And it was just amazing. I mean, to see, well, first of all, so, we get back the data files, so we could look at them so that we could make these images that would go out as part of the subsequent first press release. So when you see those first images, it just shows you how much must be working, right? Because it shows that their mirrors that point a different part of the Earth, and so that's working. The radiation's falling on the different detectors. That's being processed, sent down, and all those steps. And it's just amazing to see some of these first images.
Right. And I guess, I should say, the satellite doesn't just, send you back images, right?
Can you talk a little bit about the process of getting that data? First of all, let's see a full disk image. It's not like we just took a snapshot of that. We built that as we do swaths of, as you move the mirror across the surface of the Earth to pick up the radiation. So basically, the satellite's getting this radiation and then using filters to separate the different wavelength, visible from infrared, and then within the infrared, we have water vapor, one's more sensitive to water vapor, CO2, etc. Then that data is sent down to the ground where it's calibrated, moved really from a voltage, if you will, to a radiance, or how much energy is really coming back. So we calibrate it, navigate it, where is this on the Earth? remap it to this nice fixed grid, and send it back out. So it is a full process.
Yeah, yeah.
I have one question. You were talking about how this can help us gauge severe weather. Do you think that GO 16 could help save lives?
I'm sure that GO 16 will save lives.
Awesome.
Again, there's six different instruments on the spacecraft. So four of them monitor the solar or the sun. Mm-hmm. So, for example, solar flares, coronal mass ejections, et cetera. I mean, that's of interest to people, when they're flying in the plane, can they take a route over the poles, or is there too much radiation? Then, as I mentioned, there are the two Earth viewing instruments, the geostationary lightning mapper and advanced baseline imager. But the things that we can monitor, it's just amazing between, like I said, fires, fog. And from the satellite, for example, you can see the fog, in the very fine, river valleys. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, that's for interest for surface transportation. Of course, satellites can look over the large area of the ocean where you have shipping interests. A lot for aviation. I mentioned the volcanic ash, but just convection. So where not to fly. I really believe that once we're using this data, it'll clearly save lives and property.
Wow. I mean, and you're talking about fires. Does that include forest fires that?
So yeah. In fact, over a year ago, we have a backup satellite, GOES 14, and they let us operate that in this special one-minute mode to kind of get ready for this one-minute mode that we're going to have on GOES R. So we experimentally were able to take, some of those small sectors of areas, one-minute data, and flow it in practice to people in the National Weather Service. In February, we're flowing it to people in Norman, Oklahoma. They were seeing hot spots in some of the specialized thermal channels, saying, aha, that must be a fire, and tweeting out to their emergency managers and their forestry people. And about 60% of the time, that was the first notification that they got.
Wow.
They got that before somebody saw it on the ground, et cetera. And that's with today's satellite, which isn't as rapid in time, which isn't as fine as resolution.
Could this see things like that before they happen?
You're really seeing the signature,
okay,
or whatever.
Okay.
But still,
life saved.
But yeah. So between weather, aviation, surface transportation, air transportation, and that's not to account the whole space weather and how that's gonna affect people.
That's absolutely fascinating.
That is fascinating. Again, so if you're just joining us right now, our guest tonight is Tim Schmidt, and we're talking about NOAA's newest weather satellite, GOES 16, which has sent back its first data pretty recently. So I want to talk about these images that we were looking at earlier. The really awesome.
And show this to our listeners.
Yeah. Well, that's what we were talking about. Kind of the challenge of talking about photos on the radio.
Yeah.
It's a big challenge.
It'll be linked on our website.
So I guess, Tim, first, could you tell our listeners where they can find images?
Sure. So if you go on the web and you type in NOAA and GO 16, that'll get you to the GOES R series page. There's a link for images. So there's static images, there are full disk images. These aren't routine yet, so these are snapshots from the past. There's animations, so we've got things in color there. We've got infrared loops, water vapor loops, and as time goes on, we'll just have more and more examples out there showing the improved resolutions, be it temporal, spatial, or spectral, from the new satellite.
Right. So that's NOAA, N-O-A-A, and then GOES is GOES-16. So just looking at this full disk photo, these were fairly rare up until recent satellites.
Yes,
right?
Yeah, especially the color ones. Now, in full irony, I mentioned Vern Sumi, father of weather satellites. In 1966, again, we had this one visible band, black and white. Well, 1967, they had three visible bands, a red, a green, and blue, and were able to do color images experimentally in 1967. Mm-hmm. But we haven't had it on our operational satellites until over the U.S. until this GO-16. So ironically, it's really bringing back a capability, but much improved because of finer spatial resolution than what we had years ago.
Gotcha. And so why are the full disk images kind of, is it like, just because the satellite has to be so distant?
Yeah. So the two types of weather satellites is the polar orbiters, which, as the name implies, flies over the polars as the Earth goes underneath. It gives you strips of data, and that's important. You get a full world view. But you're right. You have to be in a special geostationary orbit far enough away to see this whole full disk. And then you need to have an instrument that, you scan that full disk off enough, not just looking at maybe just the United States, for example. So we have this set up with GOES-R. Well, we'll get this 15-minute full disk. So every 15 minutes, we'll get a full disk. Now, we do that today, but we only get it every 3 hours.
Okay.
So, and then the continental United States every 5 minutes, and then I mentioned these mesoscales, mm-hmm. If you're looking at two spots, every 1 minute.
Right. So where's the, we have, you had another one with,
The spectral bands.
Yeah, so. the spectral bands. And you put this together, right?
Yep.
So could you explain, I guess, a little bit about what I'm looking at right now and, like, what's cool about
it? Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, what's cool about it is that it exists, let's be honest
right.
there. So, again, this was part of the NOAA NASA press release that went out. So today we have 5 spectral bands, 1 visible and 4 infrared on our imager. And that's good, but we have 16 total bands on the ABI. So we have 2 visible bands up from just 1 today, and we have 4 what are called near IR bands, and then you can see things like the phase of the cloud. So, for example, is it a water, an ice cloud, or liquid, or water? If it's super cool, that has interest for aviation, icing, et cetera. And then instead of having 4 infrared water vapor or 4 infrared bands, now we have 10. So, for example, we have 3 water vapor bands instead of just the 1 that we have today. So that means now we can see water vapor at 3 layers in the atmosphere, motion at 3 layers. The good thing about these satellites, they tell you what's happening now, but then you can put that information, say, into a numerical model. Mm-hmm. Say if you're over the oceans, you've tracked these satellite signatures in time, get an idea of the wind field, put that in a numerical model. We have a better idea of the initial state of the atmosphere, and then we get a better forecast.
Right. So the longer the satellite is out there, the better our models data will be.
Yep. And the more upstream that you can put data into models.
Right. That's really cool.
Yeah.
So what are you looking forward to next? You've only been getting data for a few weeks now.
Right, yes, that's right. Well, obviously it's interesting to see things when things are really happening, especially with this. So this 1 minute data over, convection where things are really changing rapidly. We're really looking forward to that, being able to just see some of these different cases, be it, fires, et cetera, and just being able to get the data out to a wider audience. So end of the month, we're going to have a review, and then this goes to a beta stage. So it's still not operational, but then a wider distribution, more people can start to get ready, more training on it as we just spin up for operations.
Awesome. And when will that be?
Yep. So full operations is basically a year after launch.
Okay.
So we've got some time between engineering checkout, science checkout, post-launch tests, and it's kind of a phased, get this new capability in.
Awesome. Well, good luck with all of that. It's really cool, and I encourage everyone to go online and take a look at some of these images. So we want to thank Tim Schmidt, our guest tonight. Thank you for joining us, and we want to thank everyone who listened tonight.